Thank you, Sandy, for that kind introduction. My assignment this afternoon is to try to address or bring to your attention some of the more important cotton arthropod pest management issues that exist in 2008 and probably again in 2009. In keeping with the theme of the program this afternoon, keep your clickers close by. I intend to ask you three questions under these some of these issues that perhaps you can help the audience answer and maybe even feel more comfortable about their decision-making process. Now, I've labeled these the top 10, the 10 most important ones that I think can be considered your concerns, or perhaps even generate some conflict between you and the universities or you and the producers. And the premise is built on for producers to survive in this level of financial environment, what are the input costs that they can afford to reduce for pest management? Now, I borrowed those two pictures at the bottom of the slide from my good friend, Mr. Roger Carter in Louisiana, and I hope you can pick out what their reduced inputs are, and that a welding helmet in slide one or a four-post jack in number two might be critical to their survival for the next growing season as well. Now, I've decided to categorize this at three levels. One, BT traits and insecticide use. Two, soil insecticides and insecticide seed treatments. And then three, and probably the most important area that you as consultants deal with, foliar spray decisions. This is a common question that I get from producers that have been planting BT cotton for a number of years. It's been out since 1996. We've got a number of young producers, and many of those had not experienced problems with significant yield losses from pests like insecticide-resistant tobacco budworm. And when these products were first developed, they were the only risk management tool that we could guarantee using against insecticide-resistant tobacco budworm in the mid-southern region of the United States. Along the way, we found that we could effectively control pink bollworm and practically eliminate it as a pest, as well as in some regions, European corn borer. In general, those producers in farming in those areas that still have tobacco budworm problems realize that these pests can find those fields very rapidly and cause economic losses without sufficient sprays. And even though that we have had products in the past which can effectively control this pest, it has been very expensive, and they've returned to the technology the next year. In those areas where the technology has really not had any value, and the value is in the presence of insect injury, they probably don't can't understand this particular question as we go forward. Here's our first question. How often have you had to spray or recommended treatments for bollworms or fall armyworms, caterpillar pest, in stacked BT varieties? Your choices are A, B, and C, corresponding to never, occasionally, or frequently. This particular question comes from, it's a concern of the industry, the ag chem industry, the seed industry, as well as you as consultants and us that continue to work with universities. I think most of you are aware that we're talking about Bollguard 2, or wide strike in this area. And as expected, 57% answered B, that there are occasional treatments that need to go out. It's important to recognize that the mistakes that were made with the original single trait, that is Bollguard, in the fact that no sprays would have to be made for caterpillar pest, did not happen with these new technologies. And most of the educational materials that are out there claim that in most conditions, most environments, you're going to see effective control of those insects. From a university perspective, I believe that we can further reduce sprays from Bollguard by using Bollguard 2 and wide strike by about another 50% or more in most situations. But in nowhere that I'm aware of any educational efforts has anyone said that you'll never have to treat for those pests. So there are conditions, there are environments that change the expression of those proteins, and that any technology that I'm aware of out there can eventually be overwhelmed. So this is again goes to your value as a consultant to recognize the limitations of those varieties and those traits and spray as needed. The next category is seed and soil insecticide decisions. Most of the industry for most of the producers in the industry today have moved toward a more efficient planting system, and that is they want their plant protection either in the seed or on the seed, and have greatly moved away from soil applied insecticides as well as fungicides. So our second question: how common is it to treat for thrips after using an IST or Timic today, and how many sprays are needed? Corresponding answers for A through D are 0, 1, 2, or greater than 2. 67% have had to apply at least one spray for thrips control on these treatments. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're not working. It means that there are more conditions where they can be overwhelmed for various reasons, and one spray will have to go out. And I think that's the right decision in most cases today. Given the weather environments, that certainly can slow down seed germination and seedling development, we affect the residual of these products. Many of us used to believe that residual should be calculated for those treatments at the time the seedling emerged. But any time that a seedling will stay in the ground during an early planting in cold soils for 10 days, even beyond 18 days, we begin to lose the residual of these products very rapidly. And you cannot anticipate 30 days residual control if the seed stayed in the ground 2 weeks. Depending on when the insects move into that field also can affect that efficacy. The health of the plants, be it seedling disease or any other factor that will affect above and below ground conditions, will influence the susceptibility to those insect pests as well as root growth and development and uptake of the insecticides. And the pest complex that exists. We have a complex of thrips out there. Many of you have experienced problems with western flower thrips. Even though the other species may be effectively controlled with these insecticide seed treatments, western flower thrips can still pose a problem. And the take-home message is that most of the recent information that's been generated along the Atlantic coast, through Georgia, even into the Gulf Coast, shows that foliar sprays for thrips control really need to be going out much sooner than they have been used in the past. And the reason is that the below ground growth, the root growth, is being influenced just as much as those conditions that you see above ground. And by trying to wait until you see 4 true leaves to make that treatment, I'm not going to say that you won't see an improvement in the conditions and growth of that plant, but the potential to pick up yield increases in most cases becomes much more restricted. The third area of which I consider to be your most important part of the equation is that for foliar spray decisions. For your scouts looking at a field, providing information back to you to make that decision, you're going to determine best when to treat through application timing, what product to use, and what rate to use. That's probably 90% of your job out there today. And those are the primary decisions that I think are probably the most important to a producer. Now, this is one that I get fairly frequently, and that is product exchange. My consultant said to use Centric, and I'll get a call, is it okay to use Orthene? It's cheaper. Well, many of them, and I don't think that we in the university have done a credible job in educating producers to realize, at least this new generation of producers, how complicated insect pest management is out there today. That there are rotations of products that are logical, that need to be done, for season-long effectiveness. In many cases, the use of these products are legally restricted by their label. But most importantly, I think, is the fact that by scouting that field, you're able to determine that in many instances, there's not a single pest out there, but there are multiple pests that have to be controlled. Think about 1 week pre-flower, and you have a population of plant bugs out there that needs to be controlled. and a building population of cotton aphids, and you've not had a rainfall event for about 2 weeks. If someone used Orthene instead of Centric, I suspect the next week any of you in this room that have seen aphids build would probably be able to know that. I believe that this is a true statement. It's rare that agricultural consultants have the opportunity to recommend a product or a group of products to control a single pest. Usually you're going after more than one problem in a field. Even though a farmer may contend that he's got one primary pest out there, you've got another one that can take its place pretty readily that could be just as expensive in controlling. Replacement of tarnished plant bug with spider mites, for example, can be a problem. That stuff's expensive. I want to reduce the rate to make it cheaper. This has been a common issue the last couple of years with regard to spider mites because the cost of those treatments has varied from a little less than $10 an acre to over $20 an acre. Folks, it takes a 1x rate to kill an insect. If you reduce that rate, you're going to kill a very low frequency of them. You can reduce some of them in the population, but at a minimum, you're going to change the residual efficacy that we see out there, which can result in an immediate control failure or one a few days down the road. And the cost of retreatment usually, added to that low rate that originally went out, is considerably more than the original treatment that would have went out at the rate that you recommended. Another good question. I'm not going to spray till next week. That way I can co-apply herbicide and save an application. If your job is to determine the best application timing, this goes against good sense in my mind. Missed application timing by a week can result in disastrous circumstances. Whether it is allowing a low population to persist for an extended period of time, a low population of insects to increase in size where the product and rate that you're recommending no longer works, or to see a situation like we have in the lower corner where essentially there's no foliage left to treat, all are possibilities when we talk about delaying that application. It's rare that your weeds and your insects are going to be at the right stage at the right time where both products work. One or the other, or the efficacy of one or the other, is usually compromised in that situation. And saving that $3 or $4 going across a field is usually not a good thing when it comes to trying to control two economically injurious pests. These next two slides concern weather. I'm not going to spray today. It might rain and get washed off. Well, certainly there are times when we see rainfall events heavy enough, as you can see in that picture, where you're going to get some product washed off, and it was probably best to leave the chemical in the jug. But as I said before, mistiming is very critical in determining how effective those products are. Missing a spray by 24 to 48 hours certainly may not be significant if you know what the particular pests are you have out there. We do have some products today that are being used, Intrepid and a new product by DuPont called Rynaxypyr that are extremely rain fast within just a couple of hours. You run the risk, at least in our environment in the Mid-South, of multiple showers in the afternoons, and if you try to wait during late July, early August until you're going to get a clear window of 3 days, you may be into September. All this places more stress on the insecticide that you've recommended to do the job, and so it makes it more difficult for that product to work in the manner in which you anticipate. The corollary to that is the farmer went ahead and sprayed, and the field received a shower about 2 hours later, and the question is, should I respray? Well, he really doesn't want to retreat. He's mad because he sprayed, and he feels like he wasted that treatment. Most of the products that are put out there will kill insects until the time that they're removed from that field by a weather event. What we see is a reduction in residual at a much faster rate or frequency after a rainfall event than if it didn't occur. A lot of these needs to retreat are based on the specific pest and the amount of injury in that given field at that point in time. and the specific product and how long it takes to work. Some of these products that kill insects as they're being fed on are going to take quite a bit longer because the insect's got to come in contact with it by feeding on that leaf. Pyrethroids, on the other hand, are much more immediate, and you can see considerable activity even within a few hours if the insect comes in contact with it. The best rule of thumb is to attempt to reevaluate post-treatment as soon as possible, and in many instances, you may not need to make an immediate application after that event, but you may shorten the frequency between applications. Pests are left in the field post-spray. Product X didn't work. It must be resistance. There are a lot of situations that bring up unsatisfactory control, and the majority of them don't have anything to do with resistance. If any of you work in an area where resistant pests are a persistent problem, certainly that needs to be a consideration. But it's rare to see one just pop up without any warning in other areas. Examine things like application methods, application timing, when the product is evaluated, and we have some out there today that really don't need to be evaluated until at least 4 days after application. The particular product that was used and those characteristics. Misidentification of the pest is still a problem by some scouts. And the degree of pest pressure across that field. You'll hear from some of the weed scientists at this meeting several statements made that are comparable to what we as entomologists refer to, and that is to truly confirm resistance in a population, it has to be done in a laboratory by collecting samples of survivors, carrying those through one generation, and then exposing them to a specific dose of the product. My final question is, are your producers concerned about insect resistance and field control failures? Yes or no? A or B? And I hope we can get 100% on this one. Well, believe it or not, I get several of these calls every year. Most of the time it's from young farmers, but there still are a few older farmers or more mature farmers out there that don't see this as a problem. I'm not worried about resistance. It's not a problem on my farm. Besides, the companies will always deliver a new product. I don't know that turn rows are effective borders for anything other than something to drive down and perhaps separate two crops. Insects certainly don't recognize state lines, and they don't recognize field borders. Insecticides are a declining resource. The holy grail in the ag chem industry today is a product that will kill plant bugs. And I can tell you that they've been looking for that product for a decade, and we're probably 2 years off from ever having something that we can use that was as good as some of our products used in the mid-1990s. Resistance is not your problem, it's not my problem, it's an industry-wide problem, and that's really the way it needs to be treated. 91% believed that this was a serious issue, and about 9% didn't seem to be very concerned about it. And I understand that 9% because it's a difficult situation out there. IRM in cotton is made extremely difficult. You've got a number of different insecticide options out there, and we're limited because they're all becoming much more selective. You've got multiple pests that I've already talked about to deal with, but the most important one today is that you've got a crop with a low profit margin in an annual production schedule, and we don't know which crop we're going to produce next year. And then finally, we've got voluntary compliance, which means that there's really no enforcement of many of these recommendations that we have out there today. Well, I hope this presentation has served to provide you a bit of information about some of these critical issues. Most of the information that universities put together in the form of recommendations, we believe should be considered guidelines. And they have to fit a wide range of conditions, sometimes across an entire region or across an entire state. And they're not specifically applicable to every field that you look at. So the final decisions on a specific treatment at any point in time should be a joint decision through discussion between the ag consultant, who has the knowledge and the experience to make that treatment work, and the producer, who's going to be paying for it. A number of these BMPs that are put forth in the first 40 days and fruiting to finish are set up to do that, not only for insect pest management, but also for other plant protection and plant production guidelines. And with that, I'd like to thank the audience for participating in this bit of exercise and for staying with me today. Thank you. I don't know, we set up a-